All right, and welcome to February 20th on Joe's Daily U.S. History Lesson. I'm your host, Joe DeCristoforo. And on today's episode,
Panic of 93 begins with Philadelphia and Reading Railroad companies going under.
The station nightclub fire in Rhode Island. President Washington will sign the Postal Service Act. And we will wish a happy birthday to Sir Charles Barkley. So let's get started.
1893, Philadelphia and Reading Railroad go under, starting the Panic of 93. During the last days of the Benjamin Harrison administration, the National Cordage Company would also default, sending bankers and creditors into a tailspin in North America and Europe. 15,000 businesses, including banks, steel mills, and railroad companies, would close down, sending unemployment nationally up 25%. In Ohio, it went up to 50% as homelessness skyrocketed and riots erupted in streets. Businessman Jacob Coxley organized a protest that marched to Washington, D.C., only to get arrested by police upon arrival. The federal government, led now by Grover, the Beast of Buffalo Cleveland, decided not to get involved, as he saw it, nothing more than a temporary depression in the economic cycle that would naturally fix itself. But no thanks to Cleveland's billion-dollar Congress, which spent excessively to civil service pensions, among other things, gold reserves were declining and the Sherman Silver Act was draining the gold supply. President Big Steve Cleveland promised to rescue the gold standard, but just wound up getting the Democratic Party badly beaten in the election of 1896. In fact, Cleveland would have to rely on bankers J.P. Morgan and the Rothschild banking family of England to borrow $65 million worth of gold for a bailout. Which is probably the most important reason why I'm even telling this story. If all that wasn't bad enough, the legendary, possibly fictional, Panic Circular was released by banks who started the Depression intentionally. According to harmlesswise.com, Senator Robert Owen first brought this to light while testifying before a congressional committee. He had received this circular in his role as organizer and president of the First National Bank of Muskogee. The circular said this, quote, talking to the banks now, you will at once retire one-third of your circulation, or your paper money, and call in one-half of your loans. Be careful to make a monetary stringency among your patrons, especially among influential businessmen, unquote. In fact, Charles Lindbergh Sr., father of the great aviator, wrote a book called Banking and Currency and the Money Trust, and he says in the book, quote, the future of our banking system depends on immediate action, as there is an increasing sentiment in the favor of government legal tender notes and silver coinage, unquote. Proof right there of the moneymakers being in charge. But nothing to see here, right? Just keep scrolling, right? Anyway. The panic lasted until 1897.
2003, the Station Nightclub Fire. On this night, 80s hair band rockers Great White played a gig at a Warwick, Rhode Island nightclub that engulfed in flames and killed over 100 people and injured hundreds more. Illegal pyrotechnics were used to start the band off that night in the opening song and inflamed some cheap soundproof foam that was supposed to be fireproof but was not. After the incident, the band and the nightclub pointed the finger at each other and refused to take blame. In fact, Jack Russell, lead singer of Great White, said 10 years later, my heart aches for all the families and friends of the victims whose lives will forever be changed by this terrible tragedy. I too lost many friends that night, but I can't begin to equate that to the loss of a family member. For what it's worth, you have been in my prayers and always will be. Kind words, Jack. Except there's never an I'm sorry in there anywhere. Same for the nightclub management, who created a foundation for the victims' families called the Station Fire Memorial Foundation, who to this day refuses to take any contributions from Russell or the rest of Great White, for that matter. History.com has a very clever take on this story. This is great. It mentions how David Lee Roth of Van Halen has a clause in his contracts with nightclubs stating specifically, there are not to be any brown M&Ms. Now, is it because Diamond Dave has a thing against brown M&Ms? No. It's because if he sees a brown M&M backstage, he'll know the contract wasn't read correctly or even at all. And David Lee Roth, whether he's with Van Halen or not, just won't play. It's that simple. 1792, George Washington signs the Postal Service Act. Under this act, newspapers, mail, magazines, etc. would be allowed to inexpensively be sent throughout the states. To guarantee the privacy of the mail, post officials were not allowed to open any letters unless they were undeliverable. Congress would assume responsibility for the creation of postal routes, utilizing the routes Ben Franklin had previously made, including the original Route 1 from Florida to Maine. Finally, 1963, happy birthday, Charles Barkley. The Round Mound of Rebound, as he's nicknamed. He played for the Philadelphia Sixers, the Houston Rockets, and the Phoenix Suns. One of the more dominant power forwards to play the game, Sir Charles has amassed 20,000 points, 10,000 rebounds, and 4,000 assists. These days, of course, you can see him as an analyst on Inside the NBA. Happy birthday, Sir Chuck! And that wraps it up for February 20th on Joe's Daily U.S. History Lesson. Once again, I'm your host, Joe DeCristoforo. Be sure to tune into tomorrow's program. We'll talk about Malcolm X, the Red Cross, Saddam Hussein, the Washington Monument, and Rihanna and Chris Brown. Until then, be sure to check out the website at joesdailyushistorylesson.com. Leave a comment on the comment board. Check out some of the multiple choice questions. And thanks for being great patriotic Americans, everyone. We'll see you tomorrow.